Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about booze, alcohol, possible benefits, an industry-funded study that the NIH didn't know was an industry-funded study. We'll talk about that and what that means. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about the Mediterranean diet, that famous study that was done a couple of years ago, published in the New England Journal. Maybe it's a good study. Maybe it's not. We'll talk about the latest revelation and why the study was retracted from the journal.
Yeah, that's coming up. What's our recipe?
Angel hair pasta with garlic cream sauce. Think about that. Angel hair pasta and garlic and cream. What else could you ask for?
It does sound kind of good. Let's go to the phones. 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our first caller, joins us from Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Sure, how can we help?
Well, I am in a situation where I was living abroad for the last couple of years, and I didn't have a lot of access to internet or media, and I was away during the election. And since I've come back, I've noticed that as I watch the news or as I read different articles online about what's going on with the United States and our sort of position in the world and how we've been withdrawing from all these sorts of agreements and international sort of communities, I find that I get this sort of fluttering sensation in my chest and almost like a faintness or a weariness. I'm not really sure quite how to characterize it, but I just have this sort of weak feeling like it's manifested itself in a physical way. And I'm just wondering if that's normal or if that's something that I should, you know, be seeing a doctor about or something.
Zorba, now, maybe this happens to a lot of us with the news of the day. What do you think?
You know, there's that Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Yes.
And I wish I could actually say it in Chinese. I don't think you're alone in the panic attack. That's kind of, and frankly, I don't think you're alone whether you're in one tribe or the other tribe. You know, we're in a tribal situation where you have the left and right and the, you know, blue and green and the purple and the red and the yellow and the black, and it just, you know, seems to be, you know, just tumultuous times. I find it rather interesting because I recently went to a reunion in Wisconsin. I did graduate many, many years ago, and we were all discussing that. And when you look back, this is kind of society goes through these different ways, but it does affect us personally. So how long were you away from the U.S.?
A good 2 years.
Good 2 years. So you were off the grid. What were you doing?
I was volunteer teaching in the Pacific Islands.
Uh-huh. So is it quieter in the Pacific Islands than it is in the United States?
Enormously so.
Enormously so.
That's
exactly it. You know, you were away from technology and away from the hubbub. It's interesting. This last winter time, I went to a Mayo Clinic meeting in Hawaii. I had a choice. I could either go to Rochester, Minnesota in January, or I could go to Oahu in Hawaii. And it was a hard choice.
Oh, yeah.
Long airplane ride. And I was visiting an old friend in Hawaii, a really old friend also who I knew from many, many years ago in Madison. And I was sitting there on the beach thinking how far I was away from the hubbub of everything else. We were in a free zone where we weren't discussing politics, religion, or sex. And so we were discussing those things.
Setting the news of the day aside, should he get a checkup from a doctor?
Not at all. I don't think so. I think, first of all, I traveled. My wife and I traveled for a year in Southeast Asia. And when we came back, it took a while for us to actually sort of reconnect with, quote, the modern world. And part of this is simply the reconnection. And there's so many connections going on with technology and other people. So there are a couple of things that you can look at. First of all, I would recommend mindfulness. That would be number one. Mindfulness training. Jon Kabat-Zinn, he has a number of good books that really teach you mindfulness and how to center things. I think that's really the issue. First step is not to go to an antidepressant. First step is not to go to a doctor, but really to get onto your inner self, because you were just on the islands. The second step is there's an amazing thing on your telephone that actually has an off switch.
Right.
It has a plug that can be pulled, and you can actually shut off all the noise. Because, frankly, the noise is the thing that bothers you. And one of the issues is, here it is, you're sitting in your place, wherever you are in the country, and you hear about somebody being shot in another town, you know, back in Alaska. Three people were shot. Well, back 30 or 40 years ago, you never heard about it. Maybe it was in the back page of the newspaper. But if it doesn't make much news, you look at the violence and you say, it's affecting me. But if you look at the actual statistics of violence and society, it's actually different from what we see in the newspaper and what comes out of the web. So learn how to put on the off switch, read Jon Kabat-Zinn or another mindfulness, or go and get some mindfulness or meditation. I think that's the answer. You do not need a doctor. You do not need an antidepressant. You do not need
to go back to the island.
Yeah, and you may need to go back to the island, but you know, but they had their own problems, right? Didn't they on the island?
Oh yeah, I mean it's not all idyllic paradise like you might think.
By no means, by no means.
Quieter.
Yeah, it's quieter for that too. So, yeah. Well, good luck. Let me tell you one word of advice, sage word of advice. It ain't gonna end.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You take care.
Thank you so much for that call at 800-462-7413.
You know, there's a big difference between distress and a panic attack. I mean, there are major differences, whether or not you can handle it or not handle it. We all have times that we're upset and we're distressful, and it's really a matter of how do you handle it. And mindfulness sometimes is a great way to get in touch with your inner self so you can actually make good decisions.
Again, 800-462-7413. You'll find a line open now. But before our next call, Zorba, there's an industry-funded study of alcohol's possible health benefits, but health officials are trying to end talk about it.
Well, I think they're actually going to end the study. So first of all, I'm going to talk a little bit about booze and with this, before where the study is. First of all, there are many, many studies that show that, believe it or not, drinking a drink a day seems to be associated with less heart attacks and strokes. And there's not one study that shows it. There are many studies that actually show this. Now, it's not that teetotalers die sooner, but it is the fact that an alcoholic drink seems to be okay. Now, once you get over two drinks, then it appears to cause problems. And for women, it may be more than one drink. And this is observational data. It's not double-blind, controlled study to show it. So here you had the NIH that said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we ought to do a study on whether or not people should actually have a drink a day. So my thought is, what a dumb idea. I mean, in some ways, are you really going to have a study to actually, so you can say as a doctor, I'm going to say, go home and have a drink a day.
But if the study shows that has health benefits, then they should study it.
Absolutely. So I might say don't do the study, but other people said they should do the study, and the NIH decided they were going to do the study, forget this, $100 million to run the study. Now, that is a lot of money. I mean, so we're not talking about a cheap study. So it's going to be $100 million to actually run the study. So get this, that's because you had a fight. They were going to get 7,800 people, roughly 8,000 people, that's a lot of people, assigned to either take a drink a day or totally abstain for several years. Okay, a drink a day. Okay, so one drink. So you can't have two. You know, when Aaron Rodgers throws that touchdown, it means I can't have my extra beer. Well, come on, I might have my extra beer. And so how are you going to control that? Or when I go to a wedding, I'm not going to have a glass of champagne. It's hard to get people to have just one drink a day, as difficult as it is for people to have no drink a day at all. And it'd really be, and to do that for several years, it might take 3 or 4 or 5 years. That isn't why the study is being nixed. The study is being nixed because it was paid for partially by, get this, the alcohol people.
Yeah.
In other words, there were interactions with the alcohol people that apparently were secret. Lo and behold, if there were secret interactions with the alcohol people from the NIH, somebody ought to be fired for this. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you actually are taking taxpayer money and alcohol money and it's not out in the open, there's really a problem here. So the NIH basically is saying, look, we're going to shut down the study. We're not going to do it, which makes a lot of sense.
Well, it seems to me that you could not have it funded by the alcohol industry, and you could take that many years, and it still shouldn't cost, what did you say?
Yeah, $100 million.
$100 million. That's ridiculous. Together.
So it's a ridiculous amount of money. And also, I think it's a ridiculous study because it's going to be very hard for people to actually follow this exactly the way that they do. So it was a good idea. We'd like to know really whether or not, because we see this association, whether or not alcohol really is there. But you know what? What I would say, I'll drink to that. I'll drink to that.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Kaukauna, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. My question is about reverse osmosis water, which do you need an explanation of technology, or do you want to take it, doctor?
No, you tell me what the technology is. I know what osmosis is. I don't know what reverse osmosis is, so you know.
Well, reverse osmosis is a process for either purifying water or concentrating. It's used in industry, for example, the maple syrup industry, to extract the water and leave the sugars to save energy. And it's used in home systems to purify water. My father and I are both on wells, and his water has a lot of sulfur in it, so he has reverse osmosis.
Oh, I see. So you're talking about water purification for the house that you're doing for things like it. So what's your question?
Well, the concern is I did a little bit of study. There's lots of lies on the Internet, which we know.
Really? I'm shocked. I thought everything I read on the net is absolutely true. That's what I say. It must be true. It's on the net.
Right. I did try to look up some medical journals, and I couldn't find anything. What my father has concern about is water tends to take up minerals, especially when it is pure. And you're going to laugh at this, but he used the term hungry water. The water is hungry to take up minerals.
Yeah, I don't think it's hungry. I think water is water. It just, I mean, a lot of things dissolve in water. But it's not hungry to take up minerals at all. It's not nature abhors a vacuum. If water is there, it's going to suck in minerals. Uh-uh. Doesn't work like that. If minerals are there, it will dissolve in the water, and it's just purely a chemical reaction. There's no energy involved with it. I mean, there may be energy in there, but it would go against the second law of thermodynamics to say water actually is going to take up that. I don't believe it.
But yeah, he was concerned about it leaching calcium and minerals out of his body when he drinks it because he has a small cat.
Oh, you mean so he's worried that if he drinks reverse osmosis purified water, if he drinks the water, the calcium will go out of his bones?
Exactly, and other minerals out of the body leached out of your blood when it goes to the intestines and so on.
Oh. Well, you know, that's kind of interesting, the idea that there may be some sort of ionization exchange, so you're drinking water that is not pH 7, that is not neutral. I could see how, especially if you look on the net, that you would be concerned with something like that. And we just talked about an industry-funded study having to do with alcohol. My guess is that there could be water studies, undoubtedly, because if you look at bottled water, it says our water is purified. It comes out of springs, you know, that are in Valhalla, and our water is better than anybody else. There is a difference, though, in water. I mean, some water is hard. I live in Wisconsin, and the area I have is hard water, so we have a water softener in our house. But we don't drink water out of the water softener because there's more sodium in it and less potassium in it, so we don't do that. The water tastes flat. Getting back to the issue at hand, it's not that your father drinking any kind of water is going to soak out the minerals from his body. The water goes into your stomach, and then your stomach does whatever it does, basically absorbs the water. And whatever it does with the minerals will go through the intestine, and it will do things. So, how does your dad's water taste?
Well, his well water has a very strong sulfur element to it if it's not filtered or gone through the reverse osmosis system. And we have the same thing at home. We are in Kaukauna, is a Wisconsin town, mm-hmm. and we have very hard water. My wife will joke that when she turns the faucet, she's surprised a rock stone come out of the thicket. So we have a water softener as well, and we reverse osmosis. And we have two dogs. And mm-hmm. when he brought that up, my dad is I have a lot of respect for my father. Mm-hmm. And when he brought it up, I had concerns about my wife's health, my health, and mm-hmm. the dog's health, as well as giving them the reverse osmosis water that I might be doing harm. It wasn't totally logical, but there's enough pseudoscience sound in it where it could be possible.
Sure. Well, you know, that's the interest. You bring up this other point that's important, pseudoscience. Let's take something that we know is real, you know, and then let's take that and use that as part of the information for pseudoscience. Scare people, and then if we're really good, sell them something to reverse what we just scared them about. And I call that capitalism. And it certainly happens on the net where there's a lot of scary stuff on the net where it sounds like it's real. Take this out and you're going to get something else. And that, of course, is what happens with a water softener. They exchange calcium with sodium because I put salt in my water softener. It goes, and I've got calcium out of my water. But you're not leaching minerals out of your body by drinking reverse osmosis water. Bottom line is, tell your dad it's okay. You spoke to the radio doctor, and we are not fake news.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. We have one of those reverse osmosis things.
In your house?
Yeah. Here in Madison, years ago, there was concern about some kind of problems with the water. Uh-huh. And so we decided to put one of these things in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's doing anything or not.
Well, have you changed the filter or anything?
Well, we're supposed to do that when a little light shows up.
Uh-huh. Did the
and
light
as I say, this was 10, 12 years ago,
yes,
and the little light has never shown up. So,
well, you know,
who knows?
I have a question for you. Maybe there's a switch on it that you never turned on, so it hasn't been working.
I don't think that's the case.
Are you sure?
No.
The light hasn't turned on in 10 years. This is with the alarm.
Maybe
the alarm
we don't drink enough water.
That's what you need. You need water.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And before we take a break, Zorba, I have a question for you. How do you feel when our listeners write in just to disagree with you?
Oh, I like it. I like it when people disagree. I mean, I don't like to fight and have an argument, but I think when people disagree, I get more information. I look at it as manna from heaven. What am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, what am I doing right?
Yeah. Well, we're lucky. We have a segment on the show dedicated to giving a voice to these Zorba defectors. It's called...
Defectors.
It's called Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from a listener named Christine. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. I always hear you recommending Sensodyne toothpaste, and I used it for a number of years. However, I was waking up in the morning and peeling layers of skin off of the inside of my cheeks. I could not figure out
layers
why
of
this
skin off the inside of her cheeks, so something on the inside
she,
of her cheeks.
She continues, I could not figure out why this was happening, so I changed to a different toothpaste for sensitive teeth, and the problem stopped. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to let you know how Sensodyne seemed to affect me."
Okay, well, good. What can I say? You know, obviously there was something. You know, you look at toothpaste. Have you ever read the back of a toothpaste?
All the time.
I'm sure when you brush your teeth, it's filled with all this stuff, sodium lauryl sulfate, whatever that is. It's in a lot of toothpaste. Sensodyne doesn't have fluoride. Clearly, there's an individual thing. I do want to make a comment on this, by the way. And I talk about Sensodyne only because it's the name brand that my wife uses. So that's what I use for that.
Yeah.
But the thing about toothpaste is fluoride can affect other people. In this case, for instance, Sensodyne. And we brush our teeth all the time with the toothpaste. If we're having trouble with our cheeks, our gum, our skin, change the toothpaste. And we often don't even think of the toothpaste that we have because we use the same one year after year.
So you think
she brings up a really good point.
You think
with this.
That different kinds of toothpaste has different effects on people?
Of course, because they have different stuff in them. You know, they have they have tasting things. You know, they have powder in them. They have abrasives in them, and we put them in our mouth all the time. And we're doing it's amazing that more people don't have reactions to toothpaste. When you think about it, it is a pretty neutral product, but it's not neutral.
Yeah, interesting. Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, and we'll be quacking up right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number again is 800-462-7413. You'll find an open line now at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, angel hair pasta with garlic cream sauce.
Now come on. If you're gonna actually give a title, I mean, come on, it's got angel hair pasta. Yeah. You like pasta, right? You love garlic.
Yeah, not a big fan of angel hair.
Yeah, well, think of it as spaghetti. Okay.
Yeah, I can have different kinds.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about garlic? Do you like garlic?
Sure.
How about cream?
Yeah.
Okay, so give that. Come on.
Yeah, no, I'm.
Okay,
I believe you.
So say the title with a little more enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Come on. Go ahead. Come on. Angel hair pasta with garlic cream sauce.
Yeah. As you give the ingredients, I'll write them down so I can take
them
home.
Right. Okay. So we're going to start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of unsalted butter.
Yeah, 2 big tea unsalted butter.
1/2 medium onion, small, diced in a nice small dice.
1/2 medium onion, small.
Okay. A lot of garlic here. 1/4 cup plus 2 tablespoonfuls of minced garlic. So that's basically going to be a bulb of garlic.
1/4 cup plus 2 big tea minced garlic.
Now, when you make recipes like this, do you use jarred garlic, Tom, or do you just chop it up directly from the garlic bulb itself?
I use jarred, said he, not knowing what he was talking about. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is the jar. Once you open the jar, then it starts to lose some of its flavor. But sometimes it's good to use it, certainly in a crunch. Sometimes I'll buy a lot of frozen garlic, throw in, take it out, defrost it, and use it that way, making it easier. We're going to use, of course, salt and pepper. 1 1/2 cups of heavy cream.
1 1/2 cups heavy cream.
That's right. You know, whipping cream.
Yeah.
1 pound of angel hair pasta. And you could use any pasta you want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be angel hair. If I were making this, for instance, for my granddaughter, she likes the little pasta that looks kind of like, you know, little bow ties or the ones that kind of look like little screws and things.
Could I use spaghetti noodles?
Yeah. Do you like spaghetti?
I do.
Thin spaghetti or regular spaghetti?
Yeah, regular.
You could do that. You know something? You could do anything you want. You're good enough. You're smart enough.
Thank you.
Damn it, people like you.
I'm glad for having your
opinion. It's okay, Stuart Smiley.
Okay.
Stuart Smiley. You can do anything you want to. We're in America, you know, and give you that positive reinforcement.
Okay.
A pound of asparagus, which is about a bunch. Get rid of all those woody ends, thinly sliced on the bias. And once again, this is if you have asparagus around. So you can thinly slice that.
About 1 pound of asparagus.
Now, 12 ounces of sugar snap peas. Take the strings out if you have to. Sometimes they come in a little plastic wrap, and you don't even have to take the strings out. But nice, thinly sliced again on an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's make the recipe.
Okay.
Okey-doke. Okay, so bring a large pot of heavily salted water to a boil over large heat. Okay, so you're going to get that ready for the pasta. Melt the butter in a small saucepan over medium heat until it starts to foam. Make sure that isn't too hot. Add the onion and a quarter of a cup of the garlic, season with salt and pepper, cook, stirring occasionally until that onion is nice and tender, not browned, about 5 minutes, so keep it nice and low. Then add the cream, bring it to a boil, immediately reduce the heat to low, and simmer until the onion is completely tender, the flavors in the cream, probably about 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm.
Taste it, season it with a little more salt and pepper, remove the sauce from the heat, put it off to the side. Now, add the pasta and the veggies to the boiling water. Boil it, stirring occasionally until the veggies are tender and the pasta is cooked. Now, if you're using angel hair pasta, it cooks really quickly along with the veggies. It's only going to take about 4 or 5 minutes. But if you're going to use another pasta, such as spaghetti, look at the side of the pasta container and read it. And if it says 8 to 12 minutes, don't put the veggies in until about the last couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, because otherwise they're going to be overcooked. Reserve a little bit of that pasta water, maybe half or three quarters of a cup. Drain the pasta and veggies, return them to the pot, add the reserved cream sauce, the remaining 2 tablespoons of garlic, and a half a cup of the pasta water. Toss it to coat the pasta and the veggies, adding more pasta water as you need to make sure it stays nice, flavorful, and there's enough water in there to do things. And then a little bit of salt and pepper, and you're done. It's really good.
Okay, now you're a fast talker. I wasn't able to write all that down while you were talking.
Well, that's because you're a slow writer.
So, a slow listener. So,
a slow listener.
So how can I get this recipe?
I'm sorry, you can't. It's a secret. But if you have the secret, you can actually come to ZorbaPastor.org. Come into that website. You will find some startling things, photos of Tom and I. immediately will motivate you to come to the website again and over again. That's ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
That number is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones right now, Zorba, with a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Okay, well, I own a catering company here. And part of my job is to take deliveries of food to doctor's offices. And so I do a lot of driving, around the whole Oklahoma City area, which is very large. And I notice that when I'm driving, I often will get a pain in my left shoulder.
Huh.
And I don't know if it's, if I have some issue going on. I am left-handed, and it's only in that shoulder. But, it always seems to flare up when I'm, driving 30, 45 minutes.
You drive quite a bit when you're going from your catering set. What sort of things? Lunches?
Lunches and breakfast. Mm-hmm. And we're a pharmaceutical catering company. Uh-huh. So we cater to doctors and hospitals
and offices. What time do you have to get up in the morning if you're catering a breakfast?
3:30.
Yeah, I mean that's what I think you have to get up. And then, how heavy are the trays that you're lifting?
I would say that they probably weigh about 35 pounds if they're full of food.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty heavy. I mean that's not, and you're holding it out. I mean you're not even holding it close to your body,
right?
With the tray. I mean, don't you think that's part of it?
Well, the trays have wheels on them, so it's just getting it out of my car and onto the ground.
But you've got to push it. Do you have to move that tray in front of you at all, or they're just always
right? It's like a push cart.
What happens on the weekend?
Usually, I just spend it in the garden, at my house or working in the yard.
Sure.
Or I have a family of turtles, so I take care of them outside.
Wait, a family of turtles. Let me. What's a family of turtles?
I'm not okay.
In Wisconsin. We don't tend to have families of turtles. Maybe this is an Oklahoma thing.
Yeah, it's pretty common around here to see box turtles. And
really?
I was walking my dog one day, and there's a high school that's kind of near my house, and they were mowing on this big industrial mower, and I saw this turtle, like, in the path of the mower, and I was like, oh, my goodness. So I went and I picked her up, and I moved her, but I just, kept thinking.
How'd you know it was a her, by the way?
Well, the females are bigger than than the males. And at the time, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was a boy or a girl. In fact, my husband and I thought it was a male, and we named him Larry. And we brought Larry home and stuck him in our backyard. And, 3 months later, we had baby turtles.
3 months later, Larry had babies.
Yes.
She realized it wasn't Larry. It was Lorraine or some other name.
That's right. That's exactly right. And since then, she has had 4 clutches of babies. So
wait a minute. If she's had 4 clutches, where did the other turtles come? I mean,
this is another interesting fact about box turtles that I've since learned after saving Larry/Lorraine. A box turtle can, procreate with a male box turtle, and the sperm can live inside them for up to 5 to 7 years.
Oh, my goodness. Hmm. Oh, they just live inside them and then fertilize them. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
So they can have sex one time and have babies for the next 5 to 7 years.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to figure out how turtles mate.
Well, now moving on to the issue
with the shoulder.
We're leaving that as a secret. Use your imagination, Tom. Use your imagination. That's it.
Google it.
Google it. That's right. Google it. You got it. So my question is that on the weekend, do you have the same shoulder pain?
No, it's really weird. It's only when I'm driving that I start to feel it, and then I find myself adjusting constantly. Sure.
Well, I do have a couple of suggestions. First of all, you've got something going, obviously, with your shoulder, tendons, ligaments, muscles, and nerves. Google shoulder exercises, shoulder rehabilitation exercises, if you Google that, you'll come up with a number of exercises that we do for rotator cuff injuries. And it's not that you have a rotator cuff injury, but those exercises are the ones I'd like you to do. A series of exercises. You can print it out and look at the printed thing, but go to YouTube. And what I always tell people for exercise, go to YouTube and then write down physical therapist exercises rotator cuff, and usually something will pop up with a physical therapist. There'll be some registered physical therapist. It might be associated with the hospital. You can also look at Oklahoma City, which has some great medical care, and see if there's something on that hospital website. But those are the exercises you should do, and I would recommend probably you do them certainly the evening before you're going to be doing your work, and that next morning, see what that does, because I think this is a stress because you're holding your arm in that very position for such a long period of time, 30 to 45 minutes.
Right. That makes sense. That's a good idea. I never thought about looking at physical therapy exercises.
That's really – because it's a non-drug way of doing it. If it really bothers you, taking 2 Aleve tablets in the morning or in the evening before and in the morning will also help. I like Aleve better than ibuprofen because it's a 12-hour drug. But the exercise may really get to the issue of the problem, and the problem is you're holding it in a pretty static position while you're driving. Doesn't sound like it's relating to, lifting at all. Because you're not lifting those heavy things. So send us some pictures of those turtles, would you? I'd like to see them.
I definitely will. I'm very proud of them.
I'd like to see Larry's children. That's what I'd like to see. So.
I will. I will send you pictures of the babies.
Please, you do that, and we'll put that up on our website so we can finally show those turtles to the world. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. They would love that. Or I would love that.
They might love it, too. You never know what turtles are thinking.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. That number again, 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And before the break now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners engage on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. And now we'd like to honor that engagement with a segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, first, Andy in Neenah, Wisconsin writes, Zorba is always championing the Mediterranean diet, but does the Mediterranean lifestyle also play a role? People that live in the Mediterranean don't live a life that is as rushed. They relax more and don't work such long hours.
Well, I think that certainly is part of it. But I think the diet carries something with it. I think all the data kind of shows that. But I agree, and I think probably the way to reduce heart disease is really for all of us to move to the Mediterranean Sea, a link from the internet, sit out there, have a glass of wine, enjoy some peanuts maybe when we're there.
Yeah.
But that's also our image of what it's like there. They have stresses just like everybody else, but they do have a different lifestyle, as do many of us in the country have various lifestyles.
Next, Mitch in Bussey, New York writes, Hi, Doc. I love your radio show. What is the best supplement for joint pain? I'm a big man, 6'8", 250 pounds. I'm 45, and my knees, hips, and back ache daily.
Well, first of all, there's nothing that's absolutely perfect that you should take that we know of. But glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, if you're going to take a supplement, would be the one that you would take. But you want to use a brand that you know actually has it in it. So an easy way to do it is you go to a brand that is really from a major company like CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, Costco. In other words, because they stand behind it, and you've got to assume they're going to make sure that you're actually getting what is in there. Remember, the FDA does not regulate these. So although it says glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, some of them have nothing in it. And I always tell people, if you go to consumerlab.com or consumerlab.org, you have to pay $25 or $30 to actually join it. It's a site that is a non-advertising website. They are dynamite when it comes to looking at the right supplement for you.
And finally, Zorba, this one may be a bit of a curveball. Christine writes, Hi, Zorba. This is a weird question, but is it true that semen is good for wrinkles?
I don't really know. I've never seen any double-blind controlled studies that have looked at the use of semen for wrinkles. But we do know it's a biological product. And if it were useful for wrinkles, you would have to get many men to actually produce a specimen. As we say in medicine, we call it producing the specimen, which would then have to be purified and used on wrinkles. And my guess is it would be costly. But I haven't seen it yet sold at Saks Fifth Avenue in the cosmetic section as something useful for wrinkles. And that's probably my best
answer. Christine, find some semen and give it a try. And if it works, let us know.
Hey, Tom, this is public radio. We're Puritans. We stay away from that kind of stuff.
Let's keep the Facebook love coming. And you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And people always ask me, what is the most unusual question you've ever had? I'm not putting up that in my top 10.
More of your calls coming up. Another topic to talk about. We'll be quacking up to right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, an important study of the Mediterranean diet has been retracted.
Well, this is the famous New England Journal of Medicine study published in 2013, looking at the Med diet versus the cardiovascular American Heart Association low-fat diet. And it was the enriched Mediterranean diet where they got a couple of ounces of olive oil or a handful of nuts in addition to eating a sort of a Mediterranean diet. And they showed there was a 30% reduction in heart attacks and strokes with the enriched Mediterranean diet.
Big deal.
Very important. Yeah. Really good research, except everyone was not randomized exactly as they should be. And what happened was there is an anesthesiologist, self-taught statistician, does good work. And they're in the process, that and other people are in the process of debunking studies, looking at double-blind studies and saying, hey, we're going to look at this. And there is a Retraction Watch blog that actually is being looked at to see what studies are bad. And a few studies are bad, like 1 or 2% of the studies that are cited by really good journals. And lo and behold, when the guy did the analysis, he discovered a few things. Out of 7,500 people, 14%, okay, that's a minority, it's 14%, were not actually randomized. And I'll give you a good example. Husband and wife are in the study. One is randomized to receive the enriched diet, so they take extra olive oil and nuts, and the other one is randomized to the American Heart Association low-fat diet. They're husband and wife. Are they really going to eat differently in the house?
Yeah.
Hi, honey, I'm eating the Mediterranean food. Oh, no, honey, I'm eating the low-fat food. It didn't work. So what happened is those people were not randomized. In a town, there was a small town that participated in there, very tiny town. The researcher didn't tell the main study researchers. This was a sub-researcher. Some of the people were upset that some of their neighbors were getting free olive oil. And so, which was part of the study, free olive oil and nuts. And so they said, wait a minute, we're on the low-fat diet and we're getting other people getting free. So the guy put the whole town on olive oil, which was wrong.
Let me get a bottom line here. Is the Mediterranean diet still a healthy thing?
Absolutely. The data is still good. The data is just not as robust. And the data showed that enriching it with more olive oil and nuts may work, but it's not as robust. So the New England Journal, having really strict criteria, said we're going to retract the study because it wasn't perfectly randomized. But if you look at this study and other studies, it still shows the Mediterranean diet is the king of diets. Olive oil is the oil to use. Nuts are exactly what you should be eating, and it still shows that you should stay away from pork rinds every day.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones in Azorba. A listener is with us in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I have a 23-year-old son who should be healthy, but he gets exhausted very easily. He has dizzy spells and sometimes occasionally actually passes out with his dizzy spells.
Wow. Wait. So what's his height? What's his weight? What sort of problems does he have? He has dizzy spells where he passes out. That's dangerous.
That's just a kid. He says he passes out maybe 3 to 5 times a year. He gets a really bad one where he either would pass out or he'd have to lean against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
His dizzy spell is he gets those 2 to 3 times a day, short little brief ones that come with a vice-like pulsating head pain. But, I mean, for seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He can get them in any position, but most often after rising from a reclining or sitting position.
What's his height? What's his weight?
He's about 6 foot. He's probably around 160.
Is he on any medicines at all?
No, he's not.
Alcohol, drugs? Does he drink? Does he smoke?
He drinks some. He smokes some.
What's some?
I don't really know. You know, I'm his mom.
You're his mom. That's right. He drinks some. He gets stoned some.
Yeah.
Is he working? Does he have a job? Does he go to school?
He has a job. Mm-hmm. He doesn't work long days. He works like 6 to 7 hour days.
Uh-huh.
And then he comes home and just, not home to me, so I don't see it all the time, but he just crashes. He's just exhausted.
Uh-huh.
He tells me that he's not dehydrated. Mm-hmm. He had a bad concussion about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
He had a the really bad stuff started about a year after that. He's had a complete physical, a neuro eval with a CT scan, an EKG with a cardiologist.
Uh-huh. Oh, so he's been worked up for this. So he's been
worked up. But they haven't found anything.
Uh-huh. Is he depressed?
Probably some.
I would try an antidepressant. I would say if you can't find anything else, and if you've had a cardiology workup, because a lot of these are due to, we do something called a tilt table test. He should have had that.
Well, they didn't do that.
Oh, that's one thing they should do. That's part of the workup, is a tilt table test. Because if that's what it is, a low-dose beta blocker is something that actually helps for that. And that's – tilt table test is where to tell Tom and our listeners. They tilt you and look to see what the response is from your body. And because some people pass out and faint because your body is not keeping up with its demands. They look at what your heart rate is, and then they lie you up, and they see whether or not your heart rate goes up. And if it doesn't, it goes down. And anyway, that's one of the tests they should do. If he hasn't had one, I think he should.
I don't know why they didn't. I think because they just took him with a grain of salt and thought, mm-hmm. this is a kid who's been on drugs and
Doesn't explain it. Doesn't explain it. So I think you ought to have a tilt table test. I mean, that's part. If he's had a CT, a neurological workup, a cardiology workup, and a negative tilt table test, you know, then pretty much you've worked out that. The other issue is it might be from his adrenal gland. There may be issues. He might have adrenal insufficiency because Addison's disease or adrenal insufficiency can also cause problems like that. And that's mm-hmm. easy to look at with a cortisol level in the morning. You can often just rule that out. And there are other things endocrinologists would look at. So I'd recommend A, tilt table test, B, maybe an endocrinologist if they haven't looked for adrenal insufficiency or hypothyroidism, a low thyroid. And then if that isn't the case, I'd say, look, I don't know what's going on. Let's try an antidepressant and see if it works. The antidepressants are wonder drugs in many ways in that they often will help people with symptoms that we can't figure out. You know, and side effects. I mean, I use antidepressants for people with sleep problems, anxiety problems, of course, depression problems. There are a bunch of things that they do. So if everything else fails, I'd look at that. But he should have a tilt table test and then make sure that he doesn't have an endocrine problem too. If he doesn't have anything serious, the real issue is get rid of the symptoms. And if an antidepressant works at least for a while, get rid of it. He's also in his 20s. Sometimes we grow out of things. Even when we're in our 60s, even when we're in our 80s, we can grow out of things. So you just want to keep him. You want to make sure he stays safe, especially if he has drop attacks.
Right.
So,
okay.
Good luck. Let us know what happens. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, thanks for your call.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba Pastor. Now, Zorba, time again to trudge through the murky waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, in this case, we're actually going to speed through those murky waters, if you catch my drift. So it is common knowledge mm-hmm. that the original recipe for Coca-Cola contained cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to give us some background on this. Tell us about the popularity of drinkable cocaine in the 19th century.
Yeah, there we go. Drinkable cocaine. Yeah, it's just what your mom would 19th century might actually do. And I've got to tell you something. This was not uncommon. It actually was common. In fact, there was a beef-flavored beverage that had cocaine in it so that if you couldn't afford beef, because beef was expensive, and beef was really very expensive at the turn of the century. I mean, rich people had beef. They didn't. Many mm-hmm. other people would have pork. Chicken was also quite expensive, by the way. But, you know, if you wanted a beef-favored beverage, you could have something. 23% alcohol, by the way, cocaine and beef-flavored. So that carried quite a wallop. It was basically there. But there was a French chemist who had a great idea of sort of putting cocoa leaves in a good bottle of Bordeaux. And it was wonderful. People just loved it. I mean, he started bottling up this Bordeaux with cocoa leaves, and he called it Vin Mariani. And Vin Mariani basically had 10% alcohol, pretty good wallop for wine,
yeah.
and 8% cocaine.
Oh, geez.
So 10% alcohol, 8% cocaine. And it made him into a multi-millionaire. I mean, think about it. This guy was selling blow, basically liquid blow, and it was just a multi-millionaire. But there were a lot of celebrity endorsements, just like today where you might get endorsements – you know, for movie stars, there were celebrity endorsements. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, remember Sherlock Holmes?
Sure.
He drank it. Jules Verne, he drank it. Alexander Dumas, he drank it. Henrik Ibsen, he drank it. Robert Louis Stevenson, he drank it. Queen Victoria and Pope Leo the 13th drank it. Thomas Edison drank it to stay up at night. Maybe we've got the electric bulb because he was staying up late at night drinking a nice bottle of Bin Mariani, which, of course, had 10% alcohol and 8% cocaine. But anyway, the reality is we know the cocaine actually isn't good for you in the short run or in the long run. Increases your risk for heart attack and stroke. And therefore, in this quacking up statement, I would say that drinking cocaine was obviously quackery.
I would say, bartender, give me another one. Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And before we head out, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and read a listener email. This one came to us from Peter in Sandpoint, Idaho. He writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. On a recent broadcast, an observation was made by you regarding medicinal silver causing a bluing of skin colorization of the wealthy, resulting in them being coined blue bloods. Is there data confirming this, or is this just an opinion? My thought always leaned toward the lack of mobility and exercise among those well-to-dos that resulted in poor circulation and lack of a healthier, redder blood. I greatly enjoy your show. You and Tom are a joy to listen to."
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, it is my opinion. The whole show is based on my opinion. They didn't have poor circulation, poorer than ours. They died, of course, at a younger age because they didn't know about eating the right way, just like we do. Part of the issue, by the way, was the fact that because of their lifestyle, if you were rich, you never got a tan. In our society, years ago especially, if you had leisure time, you went out and got a tan, so you showed, hey, I've got a tan, I must be rich because I have leisure time. You're working in a factory. But back in the day with the blue bloods, the idea of getting a tan was an anathema, so they would wear parasols when they went outside. And they had thinner white skin. The skin wasn't actually thinner, but it never tanned. So one observation was you may have seen the veins beneath their skin because it was so white. And translucent because they never did an ounce of labor, you know, and so basically the skin was really thin, like a baby's skin. If you look at a baby's skin, you can see the little veins and see that. The other idea is it may be related to the Rh positive and negative status, and so they may have had problems with that. I don't really buy that. As for actually looking as – it's called argyria, which is having too much silver in you and making your blood look slightly sort of blue or your skin actually be slightly bluish from that. I think that's still very reasonable. They had a lot of silver goblets. If you put acid in there and they ate everything out of silver because they were rich and they could eat out of silver, the silver could leach out and they could easily have a little bluish skin from that. I would buy that as very important. I would buy that along with the fact that they didn't get into the sun, and I would buy the Rh as negative. But you know what? We can't go back to the good old days, so we really don't know for sure.
Have a question for Zorba? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.